It's both ancient and sort of future oriented. It's beginning and ending at the same time. It's very paradoxical, and if your left brain, linear, rational mind tries to grasp this, you're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to receive this information at a somatic, intuitive, felt, sensory level, because it speaks to us through beauty, through the warp and the weft of our lives, through the pattern of themes that recur, of people who weave in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of the beauty of archetypal patterns within, you know, solar systems and in the movement of the spheres within, you know, the tapestry of the human drama with the individual lives and a large kind of galactic movement. It's about the movement, which, in the words of T.S. Eliot, that which is still and still moving.
Hi, I'm Ricky DeRiz, and welcome to episode 35 of the Mind That Ego podcast. Arabella Thais is a writer, speaker, philosopher, and artist studying for a PhD in cosmology and consciousness. Committed to the evolution of humanity, her work explores the intersection of poetry, mathematics, beauty, and time, which she teaches at her online school of consciousness, the Temple of Truth. She uses various aesthetic mediums such as music, film, and experience design in order to communicate ideas and propel human transformation. Arabella and I dance around existential topics such as free will and explore her theory of non-linear time and its relationship to the cosmic mind and complex, higher dimensions of consciousness. Could it be that past, present, and future all exist in a single moment, that the now contains all that ever was and all that ever will be? Join us for this fun and thought-provoking philosophical journey. The thing that strikes me with your work, like I'm so impressed just with the intellectual vigor of it and the approach that you take, but also the embodied element. And it does feel like there's a very much an intuitive aspect to that work and to what you're exploring. And I know you focus on the transdisciplinary approach and these seemingly disconnected aspects to reality that you've kind of weaved together. So maybe we could drop in, we could start by looking at how did you start to link these subjects such as literature and poetry with quantum physics, with beauty, and then, as I know is an integral part of your work, with the nature of time. So I that's like an open question, looking at these different aspects that we have and how you kind of started to explore that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a strong opening. I'm just sort of going back over my life, really, to think about the chronology. I prefer the word chronosophy, like, or chronosophy, chronosophy, because a chronology is really looking at a linear timeline. And Sophia in Greek means wisdom. So I like to think about a kind of a wise time. So I could tell you now the sort of like unfolding of events in a sequential fashion of my life and how I came to be doing what I'm doing. And I might reference that to an extent. But really, this knowledge and everything that I have and this journey was there from the very beginning. Do you know what I mean? And when I look back, I see it's more of a kind of a spiraling motion, more of a pulsating motion in which these truths, these insights, these flashes of knowing revealed themselves at certain points in my life. And it sort of reached a denouement when I was about 27. That's when I had my spiritual awakening. And that's when the synthesis between many different interests came together, that it converged. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we live in a society that likes to separate things. It fragments things. It puts you in boxes. Yeah, so I don't know what your experience of school was like, but certainly my education, it was like, you're either good at science and maths or you do the arts and humanities. When I was a child, I showed a great predisposition for mathematics. And I played chess and, you know, I showed a lot of creativity with the approach to mathematical kind of equations. Obviously, this is relatively simple. I'm like age 6, 7. But I also had a huge affinity for language, right? And words and poetry and meaning. I was reading romantic poetry when I was about 8 years old. So I was a very precocious, nerdy child. And as I grew older, I found the way mathematics was taught And this is important, I think, this point. The way mathematics was taught bore no relation to to beauty, bore no relation to existence, bore no relation to the cosmos, even though mathematics is the language of the cosmos, right?
Yeah,
and it's like it wasn't taught in an inspirational way. It was dry, it was boring. I was also going through my own sort of traumatic experiences. So I moved away from maths, age about 13, that's when I really moved away and I became very focused on the humanities and especially English literature, because that's where I was finding the most meaning and beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where I was getting my sense of meaning from, because words are very accessible. I mean, they are accessible. We all speak language, right? Mm-hmm. Anyone can read a book. Even if they find it hard, anyone can read a book. Not everyone can just look at a mathematical equation and read it. You have to learn the language of mathematics to be able to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved away from, you know, I wasn't sort of in tune with quantum mechanics or any of these sort of scientific ideas really at all until this awakening, which I've just alluded to. I was, however, always very interested in getting to the bottom of things.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to know, why are we here? What are we doing? What's going on? But I definitely subscribe to the sort of rational, analytic mode of thinking, mm-hmm. which mainstream science propagates. What changed everything for me and which really called in to being this grand synthesis, as I've mentioned, this union between reason and imagination, between poetry and mathematics, between earth and heaven, was this awakening, which I guess I could describe as a Kundalini awakening. It was mm-hmm. spontaneous. It came out of nowhere. Like I said, I was 27. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. I was deeply depressed. I didn't really want to live.
Mm.
I'd gone into recovery from addiction. And it was during this, you know, I was living at my mom's house. Like, it was not a good time.
Yeah.
Right. And I was basically going to AA meetings like most days. And it was through this 12-step program that my mind was open to the possibility of a higher power. So for me, like the seed of someone's mind expanding and opening to the truth that resides in the universe is an open mind. It's just simply being mm-hmm. open to other possibilities, right? Beyond your current perspective. So when I employed that, within the a matter of a few months, I started experiencing phenomena that were just simply beyond the confines of materialist science. Inexplicable phenomena.
Mm.
I also woke up one morning and I knew I had to do a PhD. And it was so patently obvious to me that that was my trajectory. And I'd always been very academic. It's been when I'd been the most happiest, you know, it was when I'd been in study, when I'd been contemplating meaning, beauty, ideas, and so forth. As I've mentioned, my mind is always, I've always had a kind of polymathic mind.
Mm-hmm.
But because society doesn't encourage that, I hadn't really realized it.
Yeah.
It's during this awakening, when this crazy stuff was happening, I'm like, you know, synchronicities like you couldn't imagine. I started seeing ghosts, out-of-body experiences, spontaneous orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
I started receiving mathematical equations in my head. The number E came to me, mm-hmm. right, which is Euler's number. Things like this, yeah, like Gnostic, rapturous experiences. And that's why I was like, I started pursuing research into science, into consciousness, into fractals, into chaos theory. All this whole domain that hitherto had been pretty foreign to me, really, pretty other, suddenly became absolutely integral to my spirit and my modus operandi. And I also realized it had been there all along, had been calling me forward from the future. I'll leave it there because...
Where do I go from there? That's beautiful, beautifully put. I relate a lot to what you've shared in terms of the awakening process. It was very similar for me, like the awakening process. It caught, because I wasn't so, I think I've always been intelligent, but there wasn't an academic slant in terms of the sciences and the philosophy to the degree that happened almost instantaneously with an awakening process that I had also. And it felt as if the entire paradigm of learning and education, which fit that materialistic, there's information that you read and you take in and you digest.
Yeah.
That was completely flipped on its head. And it became more a case of information is encoded in consciousness.
Mm.
And there's a symbiotic relationship between information and the receiver of that information.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that allowed for the access of, like you said, you had these mathematical equations, these just insights that would just land and be like, whoa, that's like, and the full body experience. And I know you talk about this as well in terms of the sensory embodied aspect of knowledge and insight. I also like, as you mentioned, like the chronology and how that is something that's hard to, you know, to explain and define, that there's almost this sphere of information or this domain of information.
Yes, beautifully put. Yeah.
That enters consciousness through that linearity.
Yeah.
I wonder if from there we could look at your approach to time and the nature of time.
Yeah,
and definitely. then we'll lead into beauty, because I know that you kind of bring them together as well.
Yeah.
But how do you view that time and its relationship to beauty?
Well, first, I'd just like to respond to what you said about a sphere of information or this domain of information. I like that you alluded to a sphere, because a sphere is obviously infinite. Think about, you know, it contains all within it. If you think about pi, which is integral to how we measure a circle's, you know, volume, space, and so on. What is pi? It's an irrational number. What's an irrational number? It's an infinite number, right? I think that really speaks to the paradox of, like, you know, finity and infinity, you know, all these paradoxes replete within existence. Is actually, in our finite bodies, we can touch this higher realm. Also, in evoking a sphere, it suggests something that's complete, something that's whole. And I think this is what I want to emphasize in regards to time and how I perceive it and what I wish to present to the world as a new means of comprehending time. Time is a simultaneous geometry that exists now across multiple dimensions, across multiple matrices of reality, a matrix or matrices being various vibrational sort of codexes, if you will. Yeah, like structures of consciousness and reality. You and I are inhabiting one of those vibrational matrices right now, and it corresponds to three dimensions of space and one dimension of linear entropic time. Linear and entropic because it's inextricable with the second law of thermodynamics, which is entropy, which is the dissipation of heat to cold. That's why we have an irreversible process of change through time. If I drop an egg on the floor, I can't unbreak it. That is non-negotiably like a linear process of change through time. However, does that mean that all that shows us what time is? No, it shows us a slice of time being experienced at this level, at this vibrational level, and the density at which this level is vibrating at. The density creates confines, creates physical parameters and confines that when you raise your vibration, you can start to transcend. That's why, and you hear these amazing stories of monks in Tibet or so on who don't eat, who can levitate. They are transcending the laws of physics as we know it, because they're tuning in to the simultaneity of time, the simultaneity of dimensions. Yeah, think about the universe as hundreds of billions, trillions of years. Why not? Certainly a lot more than 14 billion years. And it is that vast amount of time, just as it is the twinkling of an eye. Do you see? It's both and. It's both ancient and sort of future oriented. It's beginning and ending at the same time. It's very paradoxical. And if your left brain, linear, rational mind tries to grasp this, you're not going to get it. You have to be able to receive this information at a somatic, intuitive, felt, sensory level because it speaks to us through beauty, through the warp and the weft of our lives, through the pattern of themes that recur, of people who weave in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of the beauty of archetypal patterns within, you know, solar systems and in the movement of the spheres within, you know, the tapestry of the human drama within individual lives and a large kind of galactic movement. It's about the movement, which in the words of T.S. Eliot, that which is still and still moving. I could go on, but I want to just, you know, leave you a bit of space to...
Mm-hmm. You know, you can just, if you want to just talk, I'm happy to listen. I just want to put that out there. Beautifully articulated. And I also read in one of your, I think it was the Time essay that I read, talking about patterns pointing to an underlying truth. Because it's as if that holification, the whole, yeah, permeates that linear,
yes,
trajectory.
Yes.
And the,
yes,
perspective outward is to see, oh, I can see that the dots are joining, yes, but they're joining from future
across
to past.
Time.
Across time.
Across time.
Across
which
time.
Is hard when people are so stuck in their, in linear time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
I feel like things like Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, that's great. If that's an entryway to someone becoming more spiritually aware, that's fantastic. But
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't really portray the truth about,
yeah,
what now is and what time is. Because,
agreed,
just as you so beautifully said and as you so lucidly understand, which is great, it's about identifying that larger pattern, a little bit like apprehending the pattern of a tapestry,
mm-hmm.
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Bearing in mind that we are one thread being woven through time, but yet at a higher dimension, which is a higher perspective, which is a higher vibration, you know, the Godhead, the Alpha and Omega, can see the whole, the future, the present, the past, it's all there, it's all happening now, the mm-hmm. pattern is ordained, it's there. And what we're perceiving as time unfolds is more of the pattern. And those people who are more aesthetically attuned, you know, whose left and right hemispheres of their brain are more reconciled and more in union. You know, I'm talking about really visionary people like William Blake, Johann Kepler. They're the ones who see more of the whole. They see more of the pattern. So
yeah,
they can sort of transcend linear time and linear evolution. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah. Oh, so many directions. One thing I wanted to ask you is, I'll share my perspective, what I sense around this, and see what you think. Because the idea of everything existing now, I also really, really appreciate and admire how you differentiate fate and destiny, and that's something I'd like to weave into this.
Yeah.
But the idea of this whole that we're traversing through this illusion of linearity, but there is a whole that is contained. For me, it raises the question of whether there is free will and whether that is the same and is static in its wholeness, even though it's a movement, even though it's a process, or whether there is an informing process through that. So almost as if the universe or the cosmic mind, through that wide, wide perspective, can preempt an event in time and then send information to certain people to receive to adjust that. So we're like entering territory. It sounds like sci-fi, but this is philosophy, right?
It is sci-fi.
It is sci-fi, yeah.
Like fantasy is reality. Like when I watch fantasy films, and I don't know if you resonate, but when I watch fantasy films, this is my favorite genre. The reason I get so excited by them is because my soul knows that I'm watching reality,
mm-hmm.
that it's showing mm-hmm. me what's kind of really there. So when you say, you know, sci-fi, philosophy, I don't, you know, they're not so different. This is a huge topic, free will, whether or not we have it, what it even is. Determinism, you know, how we're relating to the cosmic mind as participants and informing it, as you say. This is not like a simple answer, but mm-hmm. I do have a strong sense of it, which is, for me, we don't have free will in the way people think of free will. We might just need to redefine our terms Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My perspective on reality does not confer that humans are not free. It does not confer that we are somehow automatons going through a mechanical process in which we have no volition or creative participation.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that we are here and we are having the experience through time of spontaneity.
Mm-hmm.
I have that experience every day. I go out into the street. Do I go left or right? Am I going to, you know, do I get delayed and sort of, you know, take my time and I run late for an appointment, which alters the course of my, whatever. It's like that sliding doors thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
My belief though, is that whatever happens in my day, or any given day for any human, is what was already going to happen. It just feels like it's spontaneous. But the thing is we are the cosmic mind.
Mm.
We are the great cosmic director that architected, orchestrated this divine unfolding, experiencing itself again from a much lower level. You know, we're not supposed to know the whole unfolding. Otherwise, where's the fun in that?
Mm.
You know, and the thing is like, okay, let's say, you know, I have a destiny to achieve X, Y, and Z. Whether it's to write a book or win a Nobel Prize or make this film, whatever it is, okay? And for you, you have your own sort of design. Now, you could say, to explore this sort of philosophical, this kind of a thought experiment around free will, you might say to me, okay, well, Arabella, what happens if I just stay in bed? Then it's not going to happen, is it? Yeah, but you're not going to just stay in bed, are you? Because you have a thing called desire.
Mm-hmm.
You have a thing, an erotic creative impulse that burns inside of you that will impel you to get out of bed and do the things you want to do. Because you're being called. You are being called from the future to realize that which has been architected. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. And it brings me to another, we're just going for all the big questions, right? All the big ideas. But a big thing when you get into depth psychology, self-development, inner work, whatever you want to call it, is the idea of potential.
Mm.
And James Hillman, a Jungian analyst, he has the acorn theory, what he calls the acorn theory, which is essentially saying that all human beings in their soul, they have a blueprint.
Yeah.
Like the acorn has the infrastructure to grow into an oak tree, the soul has a blueprint. And yet it's not necessarily guaranteed that that blueprint will be manifested in its fullest form. It's almost like, and this is just me sharing like my understanding of his and also my intuition, in that the messages or the guidance, the call in itself, could that be ignored? And if it is ignored, what happens? And if it's not, what happens? And in my experience, on some level, I do think that a lot of what we call mental illness, depression, anxiety, is ignoring the call to a greater destiny. And the opposite, joy, fulfillment, ecstasy, even mania, is following the call and feeling the reverberation of that.
Mm.
So I want, because you mentioned like the, no matter what you do, that was destined. I wonder if there are almost like fractal timelines. And with, I was reading your work, and then I had this almost like metaphor of alignment being like that game where you go, you've got to find a spot in the room and someone's guiding you and they're like warmer, warmer, colder, colder. And you're kind of moving through that. I wonder how that relates to your view on things.
So what I would say in regards to, and I'm familiar with Hillman's idea of the acorn and I like it a lot. I also believe that we're born with a blueprint. I just don't think there's any sort of timeline in which, I don't believe in alternative timelines. I believe that this is a multidimensional universe. And what you've just articulated is maybe one or two levels up. Yeah, but it's not the alpha and omega level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like there are levels to this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you go up the next level. Say you go to, when you die, you go whatever realm that is, whatever dimension that is. You know, there are possible timelines maybe when it appears you could have done this, you could have done that. Maybe the level above that, there's also timelines, but you're getting higher and higher. The higher you go on this kind of cascading hierarchy, when you get to the sort of the end point, you are at a point which necessarily includes past, present, future. And if it does, it cannot include, it includes what's happened, what's already happened in the future. Because if that's happening in the future at that level, that means that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Can you get your head around that concept to begin with? A way of conceiving it is like a triangle. Like imagine a two-dimensional triangle like I'm making with my hands right now.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine this apex here. That's the alpha and omega. And it converges at a single point, the singularity point.
Mm-hmm.
And there, from that point, all past, present, future is there. It's already, the Big Bang's happening. Brrr, time's moving, flowing this way. We're down here at this dimension. It feels very linear and so on. But actually, at this dimension, it's already done.
Mm-hmm.
This dimension, you're seeing little timelines. Does that make sense? Like a cascading hierarchy?
Yeah, it does. It does make sense. I think, like my questions around the relationship, like I say, the relationship, if that omega point is not static, and whether evolution, like evolution and movement still occurs at that apex, because there's like a refinement of consciousness moving to that omega point. So it's
yes,
like,
or no. Yes,
yeah,
and
both,
no.
Like,
still and still moving. It's being and becoming. It's time and timelessness. It's all time, and then is the access point to go beyond time.
Yeah.
So listen, we're dealing with concepts that are really, frankly, beyond what we could ever possibly. Oh, bonjour, bonsoir. Sorry.
Sliding doors moment, but I wasn't sliding doors.
Yeah, right.
Doors.
Exactly. Okay. We're dealing with concepts, you know, at a certain point. Beyond which the human mind can't really comprehend. So I don't claim to present to you the ultimate whole truth that's fixed and whatever. I'm just presenting to you what I have intuitively felt with every ounce of my being.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think we do inform and impress the world around us in such a way that's like the reality then starts shifting, right?
Yeah.
And that's, we might call that a sort of state of sympoiesis. You said symbiosis earlier. I prefer the term sympoiesis. It's like a poetic participation.
I love
like
that.
Poiesis means a continual creative emerging, bringing
that
forth.
That's so cool, yeah.
So at this level, we're in poiesis. And at the alpha and omega level, the poem is already written, it's already done, and it's already been read.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched The Neverending Story?
I haven't actually, no.
Okay, so that is a brilliant example of what I'm talking about. So is the film Interstellar.
Oh, I love Interstellar. Yeah.
Right, but do you understand in that film, the future has already happened?
Yeah.
A bit like that.
Yeah. And they enter in that dimension of infor. But that's the thing, right? Yeah, there's like the entering through that like arrow of time, through that linearity. Can't remember the main character's name, but he enters the fourth dimensional plane to then send a message back. To then alter the course. So that's like kind of what I'm tapping into is.
It had already happened though, before he went.
Yeah, because we see the scene where it happens.
So that's the paradox. Do you see what
I'm
saying?
That's the paradox, yeah.
Which is what
I'm
arguing for.
Yeah.
Is that because if it's retrocausal, listen, if time is actually flowing from the future now towards us, it makes perfect sense. You've just got to flip it on its head. It confounds us because we perceive that we're moving from the past to the present to the future, because entropy means that we are physically, we are, but our consciousness is not.
Yes.
For example, okay, the other day I went to the sauna and I thought of this guy who I see in there sometimes. He's quite random, not really part of my life at all. Hadn't seen him in years, okay? This guy who I just sometimes see at my gym in the sauna, and he just popped into my head, There you go. Guess what happens? I go to the sauna, who's in there? This guy. Now, is he in the sauna because I thought about him? Did I manifest him? Obviously not. That doesn't make any sense. If you actually think about it logically, that makes no sense. Is it that I thought of him because the future had already happened and the information was feeding back, the feedback loop was coming from the future into the present, and I was receiving the information from the future, which then felt like a synchronicity, because then you're lining up with vertical time.
Yeah.
Which is where the future intersects with the past, with the present, sorry.
Right, okay.
Does that start to make sense now?
It does, and I hope you don't mind, because Because I'm just so into this, I'm kind of riffing off it and like coming back with my own thoughts. I hope you don't mind that, because we can also explore like you know your view on it, but I'm just getting carried away. But so you know that the idea of synchronicity and Jung's exploration of that and his conversations with physicists like Pauli and Einstein to bring quantum physics into that realm of psychology and meaning. And that extrapolates like meaning being outside of time. So in that kind of Jungian model, a prophecy or one of those synchronicities of the future and time is because there's the cosmic self that is outside of time, but it influences time. And the cosmic self, and this is what, like, for me with free will, like when you have experiences of understanding the way the unconscious operates, like anyone that claims to be fully conscious, they've got no idea, because the unconscious is vast space.
Infinite.
And the window of our conscious experience, we can get glimmers from that, but we're not in that space or time. You'd explode. It'd be too much information.
Correct.
So that tapestry, that zooming out, you have like the cosmic self, the unconscious, the cosmic self.
Sure.
In that model, and this is one I do intuit through my experience, is there's like a, have you heard of dual aspect monism? It's like a quantum theory.
No.
So the idea that there's like the overlap of mind and matter is related to synchronicity, and it relates to essentially a nomad of meaning that is within the psyche and in the material. So the process of experience is one of psychology and outward experience, and the cosmic self through meaning. And it, again, in that, it aligns, you mentioned the cosmic mind being a process of individuation.
Yes.
In your paper, and like depth, cosmology. So it aligns with that. But like the idea that there's actually influence, but I wonder, and this is just to kind of validate my view and synthesize it with yours, like I wonder if it's almost like an individual life has that degree. You know, like in systems theory, there's a degree of agency, but it's like in an ant colony, if one ant's like, I'm packing my bags, I'm not going to build this colony anymore, all right, just walks off.
A wonderful vignette. You're going to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's off into a distance, mini ant-sized backpack. That colony will still exist in the form it is always destined to, but that ant walks off into the sunset, but it's insignificant enough that it doesn't influence that omega apex. Does that make sense? This is I'm just exploring this as I share, basically.
Yeah, I mean, another way of looking at it is that actually that ant is destined fractal fragment of the alpha and omega self. And it was destined to have an experience of fragmentation away from the colony. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, think of the amount of evil that has been perpetrated on this planet. Like, think of the amount of suffering and atrocity and hideousness that is pretty hard for us to associate with God.
Mm-hmm.
This is the classic theological problem of evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I really just see it as, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, it's all one, because that's just such a sort of platitudinous thing to say.
Yeah.
But at the highest level, everything is integrated. Everything is integrated at that level. We are here to integrate all the pieces that get fragmented, because in the fragmentation of this one into duality, into polarity, masculine, feminine, light, dark, up, down, you know, hot, cold, pain, pleasure, so on and so forth. So begins the dance of existence as a pulsating, dialectical, rhythmic movement, a little bit like childbirth, which is in and out, expand and contracting like this. And that's what creates and allows for experience to unfold.
Yeah.
And the experience of remembering, right? Plato spoke about amnesis, which is where we get the word amnesia, right? We are simply the cosmic mind in a state of forgetfulness at this level. We're like neurons in a neural network.
Yeah.
One of your neurons is you, belongs to your consciousness, but take it by itself. What is that? It doesn't amount to anything. What point, when you put all your neurons together, at what point does your consciousness emerge, right?
Yeah, with the hard problem of science, right? This hype, yeah. Which cannot be explained materialistically.
It can't be explained materialistically. It can very much easily, elegantly be explained if you adopt a non-physical approach to reality, if you adopt an approach to reality that's holistic and accepts the universe as a self-realizing and souled, fabric, multidimensional fabric of consciousness, right?
Yeah.
Then it makes perfect sense. It doesn't need to be a problem anymore.
Everything falls into place. Everything falls into place with that, doesn't it? That was a big part of my kind of awakening gnosis experience of just like, holy shit, there's actually a lot of, I don't want to dismiss materialist scientists, but like what I see is actual true scientists that question everything, including the dogma of materialism.
I didn't actually riff off synchronicity, and that's how you started that,
that
chain of ideas. So Carl Jung, I think he referred to synchronicity as a sort of a causal connecting principle.
Yes.
I would very much say it's a retrocausal connecting principle.
Okay.
Right? That it's this destinal strange attractor. Do you know what a strange attractor is?
Not fully now. Could you explain?
Okay. So basically a strange attractor, according to chaos theory, the branch of mathematics known as chaos theory, which studies nonlinear dynamics and behavioral systems wherein you have order and chaos. Yes. And chaos theory shows us that there is no chaos, really. All chaos, belying all chaos, is actually deeply hidden order. Okay. Now, a strange attractor is basically a point of influence that it influences a behavioral system, like, for example, human behavior. Okay, could be an ecological system, could be a planetary, solar system, whatever. It influences it from n-dimensional space, so basically hyperdimensional space. It's not physical.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's pulling the behavioral system towards it in a cohesive, unified, patterned way. Okay, so I really agree with Terence McKenna that there is this sort of strange attractor, that the alpha and omega is the strange attractor at the beginning and the end of time, sort of pulling us back to the origin point where it was born.
Mm-hmm.
Another way of explaining strange attractors and how it relates to time, and this was in my essay, is the physicist David Peat. He spoke about a Native American tribe. Basically, he was studying them. They organized a sun dance, right? They organized a ceremony to have with each other, and they do not follow like a linear temporal calendar. They don't have dates and time. They don't have any of this.
Mm.
Just all came together and said, yeah, we're going to have the sun dance, with no sense of what day or when. And they all miraculously show up at exactly the same place, time and date for the ceremony. And he's saying, this is an example of a strange attractor. That ceremony was already existing in the future before they organized it. And its center of influence on a higher dimensional level pulled them towards it. And because these people are so dialed in, and intuitive and right-brained, they don't think about it. They just feel into it and are drawn towards the future, which is already rippling back out into the past. Okay, now to come back to synchronicity, I believe, synchronicity, what does it mean? Syn, S-Y-N, literally means at the same time. So synchronos, same time, synchronicity. The higher your vibration, the more dialed in you are to this cosmic self, to the full tapestry of existence, the more synchronicities you have.
Yeah.
The more miraculous and magic life becomes, because you're moving towards simultaneous time and you're transcending the linear 3D. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think.
It's a lot of information, and I realize I've so fully integrated it that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm conscious of, I'm not thinking so much about people that tune into this. So I do apologize for anyone. If anyone's lost, like, I'm just flowing. I'm just trusting my own intuitive kind of engagement.
Do you know what, though? People don't need to understand what I'm saying.
Mm.
It would be very unlikely they understood what I'm saying properly. It would be very unlikely that someone listened to this and was like, oh, yeah, I understand.
Got it.
But that's not the point. There's information encoded in my words.
Yeah.
Encoded in the frequency and this conversation that will activate people.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever's listening to this is meant to be listening to it.
Yeah.
They don't need to understand it. They just need to accept that this conversation is meant for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they may well have insights, realizations at a later point in time that will make sense of everything I've just said.
Yeah. I feel that. And thanks. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out as well. So like another thing that comes to mind, I know I'm kind of have my own stubbornness on this, like the free will.
That's fine.
Window.
You're totally allowed your own perspective on the nature of reality. I am not the final word.
I'm riffing up because I'm taking on what I can of what you're sharing and then seeing what it evokes. Because there are different, say with the was it the rain dance or the sun dance?
Sundance.
The sun dance. So one, like different potential perspectives on that in terms of the cosmic mind as a complex system and thought and intention transcending humanity. So there's actually a network of thought and intention that is, like you say, neurons in a brain, they create the self, but then the collective, humanity, but then also collective consciousness, Gaia, Earth consciousness, sun consciousness. So there's an up-leveling of complexity of consciousness.
Yeah.
The one potential is the entanglement of event and time and intention could coalesce so that people have that intuitive pull because the intention is set from like a higher dimensional plane.
Love that.
Right?
Totally. Yeah, love it.
So yeah, keep it. Now I'm going to get carried away with myself.
Yeah, yes, what no, I'm saying carry is on. Carry away, carry on.
So through that process, there's like a higher order cosmic intent that does kind of prelude to the evolution of consciousness. And are you familiar with Bernardo Kastrup and his work, Idealism?
I know who he is. I haven't delved into him too much because I've been more delving into Plato and some of the kind of old school.
Have a look, because his idea, one of the first articles of his I read was explaining how our human consciousness mirrors dissociative identity disorder because we forget that we're not actually individual, part of a larger whole. I think it was in a conversation with Rupert Spira, he mentions a study, and this blew my mind, and it's fucking incredible. He mentioned a study where people who have dissociative identity disorder recollect dreams from the perspective of each identity. So they will remember, they'll be in one identity and remember a dream from one perspective. So even the dream world has that transcendent, like the environment and atmosphere of the dream is enacted by the individual characters within that. And he argues that represents reality through that process. And I was like, that is incredible. And I think it probably unnerves some people as well. But that you mentioned the Plato's, I don't remember the word, but with amnesia, like the forgetting process of that, the wholeness and holification. But yeah, his view is that like that's how consciousness operates and like the cosmic mind. That segues and that is a tangent from what we were discussing in terms of free will and
fine.
Stuff. But...
No, I mean, I don't know. I'm so here for tangents, whatever. I read something really wild about dissociative personality disorder, whatever it's now called. It used to be called multiple personality disorder, right? Okay. And I'm sorry, I can't reference the exact where I sourced this information. Like I can't reference the paper or whatever, but it was about people with this condition who in the psychiatrist's office Okay, so they'd be as one personality. Say it's a woman who's harming herself. Okay, she's like not well. She's tortured. She's cutting herself. She has physical wounds on her arm belonging to that personality. She'll then switch personality in the consultation and the wounds are no longer there. Like this kind of this kind of craziness, right? Where the actual fabric of space-time is really shown to be a complete illusion. Correspondent, I think that's aligned a bit with what you're saying. This dance between individual identity and the whole, and the absolute fundamental entanglement between every cell of our body and the universe. Everything's completely entangled, and we are having the illusion of separation. It's an illusion, but we're supposed to be having the experience anyway as we move towards a group mind.
Yes. Yeah. One more thing on the DID as well. There are also studies. I've not heard of that. That is mind blowing. And there are also people that learn languages or can speak fluently in different languages and different identities and stuff like that. Yeah,
stuff like that, though.
Yeah.
How mental is that?
Like there must be certain pathways neurologically. This is like one explanation. And I say that as the neurology being a pathway that consciousness funnels and information funnels rather than like the brain.
Yeah, the origin
that.
Of it.
Yeah. It completely blows my mind that aspect. I've lost my thread now, which isn't a bad thing because I just trust that we'll go ask. What was I going to say about that?
You were talking about multiple languages. You were talking about people with the syndrome who have multiple languages in one personality. Then you were talking about the neurological pathways and how that's one interpretation.
No, still gone. Have I just switched personality? Oh, no, that was it. Internal.
Sorry, a little snort there.
The idea as well, like, so to also tangent again into like mental illness and what we define as mental illness and seeing that as a spectrum of experience and mental illnesses being extremes or moving towards an extreme.
Yeah, agree.
Because when you look at, I don't know if you're familiar with internal family systems.
Yeah, I am. I've done it.
It's basically like each of us has a multiplicity of identities that relate to each other in their own complex system.
Mm-hmm.
We are just aware. We have like an ego or a general consciousness that can see, or there's a cohesion. We might not even realize that we're in those different identities, but there's a cohesion that people with dissociative identity, they kind of completely blank out. Whereas we all actually have it's like a mini universe, like the Russian dolls, really. Russian dolls of the cosmos.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that cascading hierarchy.
Yeah.
I spoke about this nested hierarchy, which is very fractal.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting with regards to people with this dissociative disorder, because it's almost like by having this boundary, there's no confluence between the selves.
Mm-hmm.
The boundary allows each self to actually become like fully individuated in its own right.
Yes.
Whereas, do you know what I mean? Like learning multiple languages, but then you switch and that's no longer accessible. Where for us, we're constantly moving as we go through life. We're constantly moving between these different selves.
Yeah.
So, you know, I might get really triggered by something and then start behaving like, I don't know, like an 8-year-old. And it's my 8-year-old self, which has got something to say, which is sort of frozen in time. But that may happen, but I still have an overarching cohesive sense of self, of Arabella in this now time reality. I don't become an 8-year-old child. I don't actually become that. It's more like an echo.
Yes.
Like an echo. I think so. Yeah, this is really interesting what you're saying.
Okay, we'll keep going down that line of inquiry then, because I know you mentioned in, they've all blended together now. I read three of them. I read like the upshifted relationship to beauty.
Thanks.
Remembering the future and depth cosmology.
Well done on reading the whole academic paper, by the way. It's not, you know.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah.
Good.
Because
good.
I really find like when it's academic, but there's still like a poetic slant to it. Mm-hmm. That for me is, so it's the sweet spot. So I really enjoyed reading it. And right, where was I going? So mental illness.
Sorry.
You mentioned trauma as being frozen in time, and like we have more and more evidence, like Bessel van der Kolk, however you say it.
I don't know who that is, but
he wrote The Body Keeps the Score.
Oh yeah.
kind of became well known before like Gabor Mate really became like a huge, huge name. Yeah, his work around like the, like you say, it's not that you become whatever age that stored trauma is.
Like a glitch, isn't it?
It's like a glitch, yeah. And the emotions feel, they have almost the same influence on a physiological level.
Yes.
And yet there is its own, a kind of a, and I guess this is what happens with extreme trauma, there's a split in consciousness, but you have the awareness of, I'm an adult and I'm being irrational, unless you get completely lost in the process. Or there's a feeling of, we talk about this in, you know, in relationships, like abandonment or rejection wounds that come up, and they feel like, as going back to those attachment styles, they feel as if that you're that age, but you still have enough awareness.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that metacognition.
There's that metacognition. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, that it's, you know, so interesting, like how that relates to, I want to say entropy, but it's like you say, it's frozen in time, but it's frozen in the material structure.
Well, this sort of matrix, to come back to those vibrational matrices.
Yeah.
If you imagine this, like, it's almost like an ocean. Imagine like the 3D matrix we're in. It's like an ocean. It's like a, you know, it's a structure, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a plasma structure. Okay. And it's almost like we're moving through it. We're moving through it. And if something happens, that's a rupture, is an emotional rupture, it's almost like a part of your soul, a part of your monad gets fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that is, maybe that's an expression of light,
mm-hmm.
whatever our monad actually is, you know, the substance of it, sort of, it just gets a bit fragmented and it's sort of frozen there while the rest of us in a body continues to move and continues to move through entropic time and the unfolding. Whereas that is now sort of floating. It's floating. And if you imagine the whole, this whole cascading hierarchy of the universe as a sort of canvas, as a symphony, it's almost like whatever aesthetic medium you want to think about it, it's almost like a blemish or like a glitch or like an interference pattern that needs to be ironed out.
Yes.
It needs to be ironed out, but it's ironed out from the future. And then the future goes back and sorts it out.
Yeah. This is, so in like a lot of Eastern traditions, the idea of samskaras or sankaras, which are those frozen trauma imprints in consciousness.
Because
there's imprint. That risk, the risk of subconsciously assuming materialism when we talk about this and looking at it as consciousness itself on different vibrational planes or in different densities. Trauma is not just a body thing, it's a consciousness thing. That we have an emotional body.
Yes,
it has its own density, spirit,
pain,
soul,
body, yeah.
Pain body. Yeah, so there is like the idea. I love that. And I've personally found a lot of value in the idea of in Patanjali, his work, for example, Origin of Yoga, the idea of still in the mind, which is like a central practice of that, and through still in the mind, the natural intelligence of the psyche is to raise those samskaras. And we actually keep them in a perpetual loop through the denial of them, through the fear of them. So actually through still in the mind, samskaras present. And if they present and they're dealt with equanimity or acceptance, they lose their tenacity. It doesn't just happen once.
Yeah.
You mentioned
the
iron.
The charge.
The charge starts to go, yeah. And I had a conversation with a guy, John Fries, on exploring the synthesis of somatic experiencing and vipassana and how they're very similar. But the important nuance is that in trauma therapy, you can't just go fully into those pain points because the sensations are too strong and you can re-traumatize.
Yeah. You have to titrate it.
You have to titrate. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I love that. I'm completely aligned with what you're saying. And, I love that you've referenced some sort of Eastern wisdom. I think it's a bit like, you know, the body wants to heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we live in such a toxic society that we get out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And basically disease is a sort of, you know, things that are out of balance. But
yeah,
if you allow the body to heal, it will heal itself. It'll
yeah.
naturally move into resonance. It's a bit like if you put a bunch of metronomes in a room, you know, the little ticking clocks, and they're all ticking at different tempos. They will inevitably sync up. They sync up. That's what the universe does. It syncs. It moves towards synchronicity and syntony and synergy. It moves towards oneness.
Yes.
So I think, in like you said, instilling the mind and just shushing the sort of lower dimensional part of ourself.
Yeah.
We allow our whole being, our multidimensional, multi-chakra systemed body being monad, to just start lining up with that sinking. It just starts sinking with unity, sinking with harmony, sinking with concordance naturally, because there's cosmic intelligence running through us. We just need to allow it. We just need to allow it, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's why manifesting, I don't really like the term manifesting,
same.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, coming into alignment and flow is actually just like a letting go, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
When you get into the most flow, when you stop trying to control everything, you stop trying to exert your will, just go with the fucking flow, man. Even if some shit goes down, you're like, I'm just fine. If this is happening, it's because this is what's supposed to be happening. I'm just going to easily ride this wave and just stay above it, stay above the noise. Then things really start going very well.
Yeah.
When you move into that frequency.
Yeah. Like the Tao or the Tao of living.
That old kind of enigmatic chestnut. Yes, indeed.
Effortless effort. And
yes.
Yeah. It's interesting because it goes full loop. Like for me with that, it goes full loop to what we were discussing in terms of to align with Tao, there are things that you can do. One of them, removing trauma, acceptance, surrender. Does that imply that there's a free will as to whether you enter? And a lot of people through their own kind of non-dual awakening or however they'd frame it, do talk of that. I've experienced that as well. Spells of just completely like understanding that experientially. It's not like all the time, but there have been moments where I'm like, I can just completely feel surrendered and then action happens through me.
Through you.
Through me. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
I've got too many directions to go in now, because another one is like, I question whether we always, like our ancestors a long, long time ago, before the internet became as powerful as it is, you mentioned these tribes that could meet and kind of intuitively knew where to be. Like if we were a lot more in that state, and then the advancement of the intellect created a split that allowed for self-reflection, but then also disconnected from the Tao.
Yeah. And so now is the time to reunite them.
Yes.
At a higher octave of the spiral.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the Heros Gamos. It's the sacred marriage between the masculine and the feminine, the left and the right. Brain, imagination, and the intellect, you know, the mind and the body, heaven and earth. It's really this polarity. Like, it's the yin and the yang. It's very kind of, the symbol is very, it's just perfect. It's the perfect symbol for what it is that I'm talking about. It's a 2D representation of a much more complex sort of toroidal, merging, spiraling, logarithmic motion, right? Which is the universe discovering itself. And it's the intermingling of the, you know, look at, in the deepest part of the yang is the yin, and the deepest part of the yin is the yang.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that's what we're participating in. And we need to bring the two back together at a higher level of the spiral, which is, you know, 2024, with all the technology we have now, all the medical advancement, all the things that we gained during this time as well. And to just release the superfluous, like toxic, discordant shit by pulling the intuition, aesthesis, the feminine, you know, the goddess, pulling her back into the picture to rebalance the scales.
Yeah.
So that we can move into harmony again, because we're not in a state of harmony right now. It's complete, you know, chaos.
For sure.
And cacophony out there.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare.
There's two the thing, because I'm thinking of, like, how do I articulate this? There's a paradox. By the way, how are you doing for time? I know we're on.
I've got about 5 minutes.
Okay, that's good. I'm going to stop that trail. That's we'll maybe say that if we talk again. Because I'm going to ask you one last question, or like take us in one direction around beauty. We've touched upon it, but I really like how in that article you sent me, you actually define beauty as integral to the cosmos, as a like the beautification of the cosmos is foundational in the 5 4 minutes that you have. Could you talk to that, maybe, to bring us to a close?
Well, yeah, I think it's a really nice way to actually just tie up everything that we've spoken about, which basically pertains to, why are we here? What is the unfolding? Where are we going? And how does time play into that, right? That's kind of been the overview of what we've spoken about. I would say, and I've mentioned the alpha and omega and that vertex point of God consciousness several times. What I would say is that it is beauty. It is beauty. Beauty is the beginning and the end, right? It is the reason and the truth and the origination and the destination point. Beauty, as Plato saw it, the highest truth, the highest good, the highest justice, the highest level of interconnected unity, so perfect, so unimaginably perfect. And perfection, by the way, confers completion. If you were to behold it fully right now, you would just, I mean, you would explode. You wouldn't be able to hold that much information, but you would also weep. You would weep sheer beauty of it, just the sheer beauty, which is why when we look up at the stars, we feel a sense of awe and wonder and beauty, which is why when we behold a stone circle, we behold and sense a profound sense of beauty, of meaning. Same as when we listen to a Beethoven quartet, we look at a Rembrandt painting, any number of instances of superlative art, of proportioned architecture. Like, if you look at the Greek temples, they were built on what? Well, the Fibonacci sequence, the golden ratio, which is phi, which is 1.68, da 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 da, irrational infinite number. These architectural, I mean, these buildings, these examples of architecture are literally resonating infinity, right? So they amplify this waveform of a fractal infinity with the landscape. Beauty, 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 beauty. Now look at what we're dealing with today with tower blocks and hyper-industrialization and clothes and food and pharmaceuticals made with the intention of financial profit, made without any regard to beauty. Okay. And then as a result, we are living in a world that is like, it's like listening to someone on a piano bashing it like noise. What we're supposed to be hearing is a beautiful symphony. And I think that's what the universe is moving towards. It's almost like these lower levels of experimentation, of play, of unfolding. It's like we're practicing how to play. And so there's all this noise and distortion and disturbance, right? And you have these opposing frequencies, opposing harmony, opposing order, i.e. disharmony and chaos playing out. And in this movement towards wholeness, we are just gradually eliminating this noise through integrating it, through pulling it into a larger whole, that is going to move back towards where it came, which is complete perfect beauty. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, and just to use the word arbitrarily, it's a really, really beautiful way to draw us to a close. I just, to be greedy with just sharing one more thing, I reflect on that. If this, the idea of oneness, like consciousness, universal consciousness, and then what we perceive as material, multiplicity, I wonder if that, or at least my intuition, when I've experienced beauty more so post-awakening, it's the witnessing. So it's like it does exist on that bridge of consciousness and matter as well.
Yeah.
And there can be beautiful experiences that are not in that realm, but that makes sense to me, that the actual fruition, the big bang fruition of multiplicity was to experience beauty.
And remembering. It's the remembering of beauty.
And
that's
the remembering
the thing.
Of beauty. Yeah. Because if there's just one whole consciousness, Godhead,
that
without
sphere,
any multiplicity, that sphere, it's unable to witness itself as beauty.
Well, how can it see itself from its own perspective? It has to descend.
Yes.
It has to go into a different region of itself.
Yes.
And forget itself in order to have the process. And then marvel. Oh God, I'm hearing light codes as I speak to you. And then marvel in the own exquisite perfection of its creativity.
Mm-hmm.
How fucking beautiful is that? Right? That journey.
Yeah.
And then it makes sense, by the way, of all the pain, of all the suffering, of all the discordance. It had to happen. There was no other way. But enough now, enough. Like, we've reached a point, we don't need to keep having these cycles of samskara, the imprints of trauma. Enough. Like, we've heard it. Thank you for the lessons. Thank you for this painful, magnificent journey. And now we're ready to ascend to the next octave. Mm. Right? That's how I feel we're at. And that's what I feel my work pertains to, is helping to call people towards the remembering, to help people remember.
Yeah.
I'm not even really teaching anyone anything. I'm just helping them remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if it's gnosis, it just needs to be evoked rather than taught.
Indeed. And activated.
And activated. Arabella, I've got no doubt that that's what your work is doing. Like, I'm so impressed by what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
I really
much.
Appreciate you taking the time chronologically.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'd love to talk to you again.
For sure.
If you have time. Do you have anywhere to point people for your work?
Yeah, definitely.
People listening?
Definitely. So probably the best place to head to is my website, which is www.arabellataiz.com. I'm sure you can put a link in your show notes, whatever. And this year I'm launching my School of Consciousness, which is called the Temple of Truth, which will be courses, containers, incubators. Like, the first one I'm doing is called the Doors of Destiny. It's a 3-month incubator to reveal to people their cosmic blueprint and to work together to actually realizing it, helping people learn, fully embody and learn these laws of the cosmos around beauty, time, and so on. Workshops, lots of stuff sort of coming in the next few months. Just to go to my website, and that's the best sort of launch pad, really, for all that I do.
Perfect. Arabella, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. I look forward to speaking again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mind That Ego podcast. To stay up to date, you can join the Mind That Ego mailing list if you head to mindthatego.com/MFM. You'll also get a copy of my book, Mindsets for Mindfulness, when you join. You can also follow Mind That Ego on Facebook and YouTube, where the podcasts are also displayed in video format, along with other inspired videos that I create. Or if Instagram is more your social media of choice, you can follow me at Ricky_DeRiz. That's DERISZ.